Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I am Jim Galante in studio with my very, very special guest, Steve Pavlik, loyal listener of the show, and a guy with lots to say about Penn State football. I hope you're enjoying it. And Steve, when we finished up quarter number three, and I did want to follow up with you on this, I do agree that the recruiting went downhill. I'm not sure that you can compete with Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson nationally. I'm not sure anybody can compete with them. You might want to say, hey, credit to James Franklin for trying, but if you're going to lose your base in the process, that's probably not a winning formula. So let's go back. 2022 so far, couple good quarterbacks, couple really good players. And until they, I did want to point out, though, even though they're ranked number two in the country right now in recruiting, Nick Singleton was their first top 100 player. What do you think of this class?
Well, I think it's shaping up to be a great class. I think it's largely by getting back to the roots and the basics, which I think is encouraging. You're going to have to match this up with a strong performance on the field, though. I mean, or else some of these guys may start to get some cold feet. That's what I worry about. Getting him in this position is good. Getting him signed at the end of the year is even better. I thought with Nick Singleton, it was interesting. It's name, image, and likeness stuff. I heard it came down between Penn State and Notre Dame. It makes me wonder if a guy out of Reading, somebody might have said, hey, look, you know, you're probably going to have a chance to make more money, be more marketable if you stay in state. I don't know if that's true or not. This seems to be a lot. You know, everybody's starting to try to figure out this. This may change the direction of recruiting. But if that's an argument that resonates, maybe Penn State will do better at keeping some of these guys at home and get back to that dominate the state mantra.
And I think we both agree it shouldn't just be dominate the state. How about dominate the region?
The region. And absolutely.
If they can do that, even if they're not quite competing, even if they finish out this recruiting class the way they want, they're number two because they have quite a number of recruits. Probably they're going to finish 7, 8, 9, somewhere like that, as a top end. And that's okay, in my opinion. I think they're recruiting well. But when we're talking about James Franklin, I think he is a very good recruiter. I think he really showed it this year, and he had something to prove. But there's other issues when you talk about James Franklin and some of the things that you see on the field. And one of the things, in fact, I'm going to take the lead on this issue, Steve, which is the defense, okay? And there's a lot of good things, a lot of good players, but there is this tendency. You stop them on first down, stop them on second down, and then third and long, you can't close the deal. Is there anything more frustrating as a fan?
No. I mean, when I think of the Franklin era, the pass defense has been horrendous this entire time. And it starts with Brent Pry, the defensive coordinator. I mean, Franklin's loyalty to Pry, to me as a fan, when he's been so willing to, you know, make adjustments and changes here on the offense side, to me, it's just at least is suspect, not questionable. The other thing I'd point out, too, just as a longtime Penn State fan, is just this lack of physicality up front. And every year, it seems we're playing these teams and the opposing quarterback always has the game of their life against the Penn State secondary. And the pass rush is non-existent at times when it matters. I mean, most of these sacks, we talk about Penn State leading the nation or leading the league in sacks, most of them are piled up early on against a lot of these cupcakes. I mean, other than 2016, when was the last time you saw any pressure up front against Ohio State when it mattered? And then as somebody who lives in Maryland and has to hear this, what happened last year from the other people that live here, I mean, with those guys running wide open, I mean, that constant miscommunication, I mean, like, I don't know what's going on here, but what I know is that regardless of who's playing back there, it's the same problems year in and year out, and why aren't they being addressed? And just, again, to me, it starts at the top. And if you want to go to recruiting, I mean, look, Ohio State has some pretty good assistant coaches there that are able to recruit and get a lot of these guys. Larry Johnson was obviously very good at Penn State. I think he's doing a very good job at Ohio State. And you got Brian Hartline. And it makes me wonder if we made some changes here at the defensive end, you know, might that elevate some of the recruiting here? So that's something I would point out.
You make some real good points there, and I do think coaching and the coaching staff could make really change things. You see what Juwan Sider has done in the running back room. You're hoping you're going to see improvement at wide receiver like we saw last year, and hopefully the offensive line. But on the defensive side of the ball, Steve, consistently we see a defense that gives up the big play, and this happens year after year after year. Are you looking for maybe a change on the defensive side with Brent Pry?
I mean, look, you keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. I'm pretty sure that's a definition of insanity, and that's at least what it feels like here as a Penn State fan. So whatever you're doing back there isn't working, and why isn't it changing? And I can't help but wonder, again, Franklin's pulled the trigger here on a number of offensive coordinators. Why hasn't he done it on the defensive side?
Well, also, I mentioned earlier that we have the coach, Nick Caduti, on. We have a segment coming up that I've already recorded with him where he has talked about the defense and the lack of communication. And, Steve, I don't know if I should recommend it to you or not, but on For the Bloggy, the segment, he looks at the defense, and he looks at the defense against Maryland in that game, and it's terrible. There's one play where he actually points out five different mistakes that are made by the defense on one play, and that is it is very frustrating. Do you think it's fixable, or is the only answer making a change there?
If five guys on one play did something wrong, then that's on the coaches. It's one thing if one guy makes a mistake. And look, that's one of the great things about football, is everybody has to do their part. So if one guy breaks down, that could cost you. But when five guys on one play aren't doing what they're supposed to, that reflects poorly on the coaches. And look, whether it's a defense or the offense, I mean, I struggle as a fan to remember the last time when Penn State actually won a game by out-scheming the other team. Just lining up and say, okay, you know, pretty equally matched here. Because of these coaching decisions, we were able to prevail. I haven't seen that. At least I'm not remembering that. And I'd like to see more of that.
Well, you know, that's always a tough question to put. When you win a game, the example you use where Penn State lost to USC in the Rose Bowl. And what was frustrating there was there have been a couple games where Penn State has had the big lead, and they didn't have it in their bag of tricks on offense how to finish out a game. You know, could they run the ball down someone's throat? Could they finish the game? But I do believe that when we look at that, we miss the games that they did something special. And I'll bring up again that same year. Remember, they did find a way to beat Ohio State. And they did find a way to beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. I would at least put those two games out there as ones where they did something right to win those games.
They made good adjustments in the Wisconsin game. I mean, the Iowa State game, I was as happy as anybody that they won. But, I mean, let's be honest, they got lucky there were some of those block kicks. One thing I did see finally in terms of acknowledging some progress, even though it took a frustratingly long time, was it seemed like in 2019 they finally established, after many years, some short yardage running game and running the clock with Noah Kane. I know he was hurt last year. Maybe we get back to that moving forward. It also seemed like all these years when, you know, it was third and short and McSorley was too small to really be a threat there to get the first down because everybody's keying on the running back and you're having Tommy Stevens on the bench, they did put Will Levis in there a little bit and break that up. Now you have an issue where you don't really have anybody like Will Levis still, you know, there. But at least there were some signs of, you know, after years of not really figuring out, you know, how to get a short offense or something to run the clock, that the coaching staff did sort of make some adjustments there. But they also did things like throw fades in the end zone to 5 foot, you know, something receivers, which at any level of football is just maddening. And this whole prevent defense just prevents us from winning, whether it was the Ohio State comebacks, the USC game, Michigan State, et cetera. So, you know, I still think there's a lot of coaching improvements that could be made. And look, at the end of the day, what Franklin's records, what, 84-43? If you average out, that's about 8-4. And I guess that's my concern, is that more or less what we're looking at moving forward on average? Is 8-4, 9-3? Is that going to be the expectation? Or is the expectation to really compete and challenge with Ohio State? And have you lost that ability by not being able to capitalize on that early momentum? It's hard enough to climb the mountain once. Just physically, it seems like it'd be harder to climb it twice.
It is. And I believe that this 22 recruiting class is so important to Franklin. And I think it's also, and you alluded to it, Steve, was their performance this season. You know, this can't be a 7-6 season because they'll lose that momentum. I think if they could combine 9-3 or 10-2 along with a big recruiting year, they could climb that mountain again. And I do think it is their tough luck to be in that same division as Ohio State, because you're comparing them to one of the three only elite teams. And by the way, Ohio State's recruiting has gotten even better the last couple years.
Well, I'm hoping maybe with the playoff expansion, you know, that will no longer dog Penn State. You could say that they're a playoff team. I think that should be the expectation moving forward, is to consistently be in the playoff and to make the playoff. And if that's not going to be the reality, then I think they do need to think about, you know, making a change to try to get that, because I don't think as fans we should lower our expectations to that.
Okay, Steve, in the last minute we have, your last minute with the soapbox, you could get up there and say whatever you want. What are your thoughts going forward with this program? What would you like to see?
Well, I think it starts with establishing an identity. You know, what do you want to be as a program? And then recruiting to that and developing it. And I think it seems like there's some optimistic signs here heading into 2022. But I think that's going to really depend largely still on what the performance we see in 2021 on the field is. And that's sort of where I see the direction moving forward.
What do you think of Mike Yurcich coming in?
I got high hopes. I think everybody does. I mean, despite my pessimistic tone, I am actually an optimist. But I want to be careful, too. I mean, he only has so much to work with here with Sean Clifford. And maybe that's where we differ in terms of, you know, where we think his ceiling might lie. If he can be a miracle worker and do something, I'll be all the happier for him. But, you know, he can only do so much with what he has to work with. And so I think we have to be patient with him there. And maybe the real opportunity is, you know, whether it's Prabula or Aller coming in and see if he's willing to help mold those guys. The disappointing thing is, if Yurcich is half as good as we all think he might be, I don't think he's going to be there for very long. And where are we going to be back at square one?
All right, that's going to have to be it. Steve, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed it. I hope you did. And to our listeners, I know you're not afraid to do it. Send me your notes. Let me know. Let me know if you enjoyed this, having a fan come in and talk to us. Maybe we'll do it again sometime, and maybe it'll be you. That is it for this edition of the show. Thank you all for tuning in, and join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Fans are back, and so is tailgating. To celebrate, GoPSURV.com has a very special offer. For the first home game of the season, rent one RV and get a second one for free. A two-for-one deal. That's right. You can double the family, double the friends, definitely double the fun. Go to GoPSURV.com or call Mark at 1-800-519-8467 for more information.
It's time to get undomesticated. It's time for Labatt Blue. Time to get off the couch and on the beach, on the trails, on the lake, onto what you love doing best. Get in touch with your adventurous side. Get out the ATV, the tent, the sunscreen. Get out the cooler and fill it high with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because nothing goes better with the great outdoors. It's time to get up, get out, get undomesticated. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.